Well, good morning, folks. We'll be in Genesis 12 this morning, starting off. And God is doing a kind of a change in plan right now. So far, He's dealt with has dealt with man. And I kind of look at dispensation. We're dispensationalists in here, aren't we? And I kind of look at the dispensation, and I watched how everybody brings it down, breaks it down. And some people think that we're in like the patriarchal dispensation right now. But God is starting to deal. So far, how has He dealt with humanity? In the Adam, starting off in the garden, He dealt with one-on-one with Adam and Eve, right? And then He had a time where He, after the garden, after the fall, then He kind of dealt with men individually. They call that the antediluvian stage, or age, or whatever. But and some people call it the antediluvian dispensation. Then after that particular point, after the flood, he started letting men govern themselves, right? So He said, okay, y'all didn't want me one-on-one. You didn't want me this way. So now I'm gonna let you kind of go out there and see if y'all can. I'm gonna show y'all that y'all can't even govern yourselves, even though you think you can. And we kind of see that in our own age. We're still governing ourselves in a way, are we not? And now they went through this whole stage, and now we have this Tower of Babel with everybody was speaking the same language. And God said that if humanity continued to have the same language, there's nothing that would be that they couldn't do. And they were taken and they were trying to gather themselves in one place. And what did God want them to do? What was their mandate for God after the flood? To go forth and fill the whole world back up. How can you fill the whole world back up when you have this one city that everybody wants to go to? So God, instead of causing another flood, which He promised He wasn't going to do, He took and come down at the Tower of Babel, and He confused their languages. Now, I don't know how this happened, but I could imagine, so, you know, one guy talking to another, and you know, we know how's the rapture going to happen? In the moment, in the blinking of an eye, right? Can you imagine that the Tower of Babel, and in the moment, in the blinking of an eye, you're talking to your neighbor, and all of a sudden he starts talking in some place in gibberish that you can't understand. What's happened to you, man? And the same thing going back and forth. How has language divided us up in our own lifetime? Usually, if somebody speaks the same language, they tend to get along a little bit better. We get along pretty well with England, although they think we're separated by a different language. The people in Texas, we put up with that Yankee accent, even though they're not supposed to come down here. It's okay for them to visit, but they shouldn't be able to stay. I'm not even getting into the California people over there, okay? They don't really have a weird accent or anything like that. They're kind of, they really don't have any accent at all, unless you get to that valley type accent. You remember that down during the 80s? Yeah, now I'm showing my age a little bit. But you see how things change. And God deals he's dealing with the generations in different ways. And now we're coming into more of a patriarchal thing. And He says in Genesis 12:1, He says, "Now the Lord said to Abraham, go forth from your country and your kindred and your father's house to a land I will show you." Now, who is Abram? Abraham is simply a man. What lineage does he fall from? He comes down from the lineage of Shem, right? So he's through this godly lineage that was worked down through that. God shall, he can date his existence all the way back to Shem, to Noah, all the way back to Adam. And that's important. One, why do we have genealogies? It sets us a time frame, right? And why do we have genealogies? It shows that God is true all the way back to Adam. The lineage can be traced. So that seed that was going to crush the head of the serpent, you can be traced all the way back to Adam. It's important stuff. We kind of like skip over the genealogy because it's kind of boring. Hard to say, but kind of boring. But it's important. So he's been told to leave his house, his father's house, where he's been living. And how old is Abraham at this time? Does anybody know? 75 years old. Why are you still living in your house if you're 75 years old? Right now, you'd be getting ready for, he should be in retirement already, some of the people. But no, the people live longer during this time, and it's important to know this. So he's still living in his father's house, and he's told to leave and go to a land that I will show you. God's saying this to him. It says, and God said to him, and I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. Did he do that? God did exactly what he said he was going to do. What nation came out of Abram? The nation of Israel, right? We have an Israel around to this day, do we not? Yes, sir. Yeah. But this is kind of dealing with the promise. But yeah, Ishmael, there's other lineage that came out of Abraham. You're correct. He says, I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. Has Israel been a blessing over the years? Yes. And God fulfilled what he said he was going to do. He went on to say, and I will bless those who bless you. And it says in the King James, I will curse those that curse you. But I'm in the ESV. It says, and him who dishonors you, I will curse. And in all the families of the earth, ye shall be blessed. Or the earth shall be blessed. So it says that in those that bless you, he's going to bless those that bless you. So in this particular time, God is dealing with Abraham through the and it will soon be the nation of Israel, okay? We'll get to that a little later on, but he's dealing with Abraham. And this is the promise. Those that bless you, I will bless them. Because why? Because God has chosen to deal with mankind through this one particular way in this dispensation. He said to them, I'm going to deal with you through this man, through this nation of Israel. And that's what he's setting up at this particular time. And he goes on to say, those who dishonor, those that curse you, I will curse. In other words, if you treat Abraham, right now it's Abram. I'm sorry, I keep going back to Abraham. I'm sorry if I mess that up. It'll get changed later. But if you curse Abram, then you're going to get the cursings from God. In other words, God's not going to benefit you in any way. If you do something that dishonors this man, then God will use that against you. Why? Because he's dealing with this man. Why is he dealing with Abram? It's his choice. He can do whatever he wants to. He's God. I'm man. And that's the way everybody is. He is God. We are man. He is the creator. We are the creative. He has a right to do with us what he will. Yeah, but that's later on. I don't want to kill our thunder for later on. I'm just trying to deal with Abram right now. But yeah, you're right. It goes into the nation of Israel. But it also says, in all the families of the earth, in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Is that true? How so? The blessing comes from the seed that come all the way down, the promise,
But the seed, no, not just the promise, the seed, the Lord Jesus Christ that came through that lineage. That's the blessing for the rest of the world. God has fulfilled His promise all the way through. And the seed shall come through Israel. That's the way it's designed. That's the way God decided He was going to do. Now, not right at this moment, in this time, understand, we're way back here. We're way back here. The Tower of Babel has happened. Now he's went to Abraham and he's dealing with him. It says, so Abraham went, and as the Lord told him, and Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed Haran. Now, I kind of looked at the map on this one. I didn't think to put up a thing, but the Haran's kind of down here, and it's like the Euphrates is running up this way, and he's sitting way down here, so he's kind of going to move up the Euphrates this way as he goes through that. I really should have put up a map, but I apologize for that. Yeah. So, he's been 75 years old, and he's going to depart Haran. And his nephew, Lot, decided to tag along with him, which there was nothing wrong with. So Abraham went with the Lord as told him, and Lot went with him, and Abraham was 75 years old when he departed Haran. And Abraham took Sarai, his wife, Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions they had gathered, and the people they had acquired in Haran, and they set out to go to the land of Canaan, where they came, they set out to go to the land of Canaan. I'm going to kind of stop right there. When it says the people they had acquired, what are we talking about? Servants? Possibly slaves at this particular time? It was known to be happening. So, I don't want to sugarcoat anything. We could be talking about service. We could be talking about slaves at this particular time. Like I said, I don't sugarcoat anything. But there was people then, possessions that are acquired, and that had they gathered up and they took with them all the way up. And they set out to go to the land of Canaan. This is where God showed him to go to. It said, when they came to the land of Canaan, Abraham passed through the land to the place of Shechem, to the oak of Morah, at the time that the Canaanites were in the land. So he's passing through this land. He goes all the way to the place called Shechem, to the oak of Morah, and the Canaanites are still in this land at this particular time. It's land. It's going to be inhabited, right? If somebody's not there, somebody else is going to move in. So, you have Canaanites in the land at that time. And the Lord appeared to Abraham and said, to your offspring, I will give this land. God just made him a promise. To his offspring, he's going to give that land. Now, this is going to take a long time. A long time. If we go up to, what was the years of captivity? How many years were there in captivity? 430 years? That's not counting the life of Abraham up until that time. That's not counting the life of the patriarchs. This is a long time away. God is looking on the long-term plan, right? Kind of hard for us to look at the long-term plan sometime, isn't it? We have a short-term outlook on how we do it, look at things. We see what's happening in the here and now. And we must trust in what God has us. God takes and He builds us up the way that He wants us to be. He grows us up in grace and knowledge of Him. And then He sets before us things that we need to do. And sometimes we don't feel like we're up to the task, huh? I know that right now. But through faith, we step off into that, don't we? So Abraham, right now, God said, "I want you to leave all your. I want you to leave everything you know, and go into this place." When he gets there, he says, "I'm going to give all this land to you." And Abraham believed him. Simple belief. What did Abraham do? So he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Now from there he moved down to the hill country east of Bethel and pitched a tent at Bethel west of Ai, on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed on, still going toward the Negev. So he was continuing up to this particular area. He's kind of going up. And he's looking at all this land that God promised him, right? He's sojourning through the wilderness at this particular time. Yes, Coach. South. So he's going toward the... So Coach said that Negev means south, so evidently he's moving a little bit to the south right now. South is a good place to be. We like the south. That north place is kind of weird. They speak weird. So... He's moving toward the Negev. It says, and it kind of goes on up, but you see a skipping of time right here. He's been in the wilderness for a little while. It says, now there was a famine in the land. So Abraham went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land. Now I've read some commentaries on this. Why would Abraham move out of the land that God promised him? Was it wrong for Abraham to go down to Egypt? Should have Abraham have stayed up in the land that God had promised him that he was going to give to his kids? He didn't tell him to stay, brother, but he didn't tell him to leave. You know what? God gives us the freedom to do some things sometimes, right? God doesn't, in some things, God allows us to move within a certain amount of our own understanding. So at this particular time, there was a famine going on. And let me ask you a question. At this particular time, if this was Abraham, if this was the same Abraham that put his son on the altar to be killed, do you think that he might have had a little bit different understanding and maybe stayed where he was, knowing that God was going to supply for him at this particular time? Do you think that Abraham, during his life, grew in his faith, grew in the grace and knowledge of the Lord, not the Lord Jesus Christ, but God? God continually taught him, and how he had more faith, God supplied more knowledge. We understand that Paul was on the road to Damascus. Did God reach down and zap all the information of the grace message into him at one time? He had to grow in the grace and knowledge of who the Lord Jesus Christ was. And I think Abraham had to do the same thing. Abraham was this young follower of God, and he was doing what God wanted to do, and he gave God the honor. And now we see there's a famine in this land, and he sees that maybe he needs to move a little bit down toward Egypt, because he hears there's plenty of good food in Egypt. That puts added weight on you, too. When you have people that you are responsible for, that puts a burden upon your shoulders that you have to carry. And it's a heavy burden. Anybody that has had children underneath them, know it's a heavy burden, because you feel responsible for every time they do something wrong. You look back on it and you say, could I have taught them better? Did I do something wrong in their upgrading to lead them toward this direction? Was it something that I did that showed them that this was okay? There's an added burden there. So yeah, you're completely right, Wes. I couldn't understand. I can concur with that. So, but he made a choice at this particular time because of the drought that was very severe, or famine, not drought, it said famine, famine could mean anything. You know, evidently there's not enough food, there's not enough stuff to go around. So he went down to Egypt. Now, when he was about to enter Egypt, he told Sarai's wife, I know that you are beautiful, you are a woman, beautiful in appearance. Now, Sarai is 65 years old right now. He was 75 when he left. She's probably 70 years old right now. Just throw dates out there. I don't have exact dates, but there's been some time. You just don't walk through this all the time, and it's not like you jump in the Jeep and drive across country, okay? This isn't the way you do it. So, she's probably a little older right now, but she's still a beautiful woman. Why is she a beautiful woman? Well, it goes on to say that when the Egyptians saw her, they brought her into the harem of the Pharaoh. He must have been a beautiful woman. So he's going there and he says to her, now, when he said to Sarah, he's like, I know you are a beautiful woman in appearance. He goes on to say, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, is this his wife? Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Do you think God would allow them to kill him? I think he's already forgotten the blessings and the curses. If they take and they were to lay a hand on him in a hard way, God would get the curse. They would get the curses of God. God, he's protected by God, but he's still learning this, right? Yes, sir. Yeah, and like Coach is saying, this is kind of a... Did he lie to the pimp? No, Sarai was his half-sister. So, in a way, it wasn't a lie. But it was deceitful, was it not? And this is not the only time he does this. He's worried that they're going to... Because his wife is beautiful... They're going to take and kill him and take his wife and all his possessions from him. So he says, tell them you're my sister and not my wife. He says, say you are my sister, that it may go well with me because you, and that my life may be spared for your sake. In other words, if you tell them I'm your sister, you're my sister, then they're not going to want to kill me. They're going to want to give me things because they want to. Because you're so beautiful, I'm going to get a lot of good things. They'll be good to me. They'll be kind to me. God is going to protect him in either way it goes. But he didn't fully understand that yet, did he? That's the reason why I'm saying he's growing in this knowledge of exactly who God is. He doesn't know God to the extent that he will know God later on in his life, does he? Is that not the same for all of us? Are we all not on this walking this path of faith that as we move from, Paul calls it moving from faith to faith. In other words, you have faith in God that he's going to do something, and he shows that he's true in what he is, and he renders to you, and you see his working in your life, and it gives you more faith to take that next step. If you're walking out on a path and you take that first step is always the hardest step to take, isn't it? Because it's comfortable back over there. Wait a second, you mean I got to walk across that little narrow path right there to get to the other side, over to that mountain on the other side? It's comfortable over here. If I fall over here, I'm going to land on the ground. If I fall there, I'm going to fall off the path. And we stay in our comfortable zone sometimes, don't we? And God doesn't want us in our comfortable zone. God doesn't want us relying on part of what the world's going to give us and what we have and our friends and our family. God wants us to rely on Him. He says when he's walking through the thing that a man should leave, don't worry about your family, don't worry about that. You should be giving your whole life to God. And if you do that, God's going to honor that and take care of you. These people that follow Jesus Christ, they had to drop what they were doing and go follow Him. That's what the disciples did, right? I'm sure they gave up other obligations. They gave up other stuff that they had. They gave up their business, their livelihood, so they could go follow this man walking around telling who God is. So, he says that you are my sister because yet my life will be spared for your sake. When Abraham entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into the Pharaoh's house. Now, this is a really different society, right? You walk into a city, somebody sees, so you're Abraham, you're walking into this city, and when it says the princes of the Pharaoh, it could be the sons, it could be the people that have the Pharaoh's ear. The princes of the Pharaoh saw her and they praised her to the Pharaoh, and the woman was taken to the Pharaoh's house. When you enter this city, the Pharaoh is the all-powerful thing in the city, right? He's the ruler. He is in charge. And you, once you enter his domain, he has total control over what happens. So, whenever he entered that domain, it almost seems like maybe Abraham was a little bit right here. Maybe Abraham was right for saying it was his sister, right? Maybe the deceitful attitude was needed. I don't think so, but you kind of get the idea that you see how they were treated when they walked into the city. Everybody thought she was beautiful, and she ended up in the Pharaoh's house. And it goes on to say, and for her sake, because she was a beautiful woman, for her sake, he dealt well with Abraham. Did not Abraham say that back over here? Say to your my sister, and it'll go well because of you, and my life may be spared. It's going to be good for me because of you, and my life may be spared. Abraham kind of knew how this plan was going to go, didn't he, when he walked in there? He knew what kind of people he was dealing with. Does that make it right to lie? I don't think so, but still. Out of fear, not faith. Hey, my point being is you have a young, and I'm not going to say Christian because he's not a Christian, but you have a young follower of God. And you'll see the growth in Abraham all through his life. And that's what we see. Abraham's no different than you and me when we come to God. Okay, we have our faith. We have faith in God. But now we must grow and we must understand and we must know. And God will teach us. But he only teaches us to the point we allow him to teach us. So, but he went in there, and he said, he dealt well with me, and he had sheep, and for her sake he dealt well with Abraham, and he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male servants, female donkeys, and camels. Abraham got rich off of this. Let me tell you something. If you got livestock, it's the way to go there. If you didn't have livestock, what did all these animals give him? What does sheep and oxen give him? Well, the donkeys give him to carry things, right? Donkeys can carry things. If you have male and female donkeys, that means you can make donkeys, right? If you have camels were made to ride. Camels were made to carry things in this particular thing. They could carry things long distance. It allows you to have things. Okay? When you see a big procession of a bunch of animals coming in, that man was wealthy. If we go through and we see a rancher out there and he's got 1,000 head of cattle, he's wealthy. Because that's assets out there that he could take care of. He could sell. It helps protect him from the things that happen. Anyway, I digress. So for her sake, he dwelt with him. So he benefited from this relationship monetarily and financially, didn't he? That's to say that he was a lot richer when he left than he was when he got there. It says, but the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because Sarai, Abram's wife. So even though Abraham was deceitful, even though he didn't tell the truth, even though the Pharaoh didn't know that she was married, God honored what he said he was going to do with Abraham. He's going to take one. If you take and you treat Abraham well and you treat his family well, you get the blessings, right? If you didn't when he took and basically subjugated Sarai to his harem, thank you, then now he gets the curses. And it says, not only says that, but it afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues. Evidently, there was more than one because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Now, what could the plagues be? It could be any kind. They could have colds. They could have sores. They could have boils. They could have any number of things. It doesn't mean death. When we think of plague, we think of the bubonic plague and everybody dying. No, plagues doesn't mean death. Plagues mean that God inflicted them with things that discomfort them. And also, it kept Sarai safe during that time while she was in that harem. It kept her pure because she was Abraham's wife. So God, it was God's protection for them. God held out a hand and he put a hedge around them and saying, you're not coming near my people. That's the thing. Now, God doesn't tell us in here how Pharaoh found out that Abraham and Sarai was married. Maybe everybody around him, except for these people, had the plague. And maybe he deduced it. I have no idea. God doesn't tell us that information. But Pharaoh come to find out that Abraham had lied to him and had basically, from Pharaoh's point of view, Abraham did this to him. Because you can see, so Pharaoh called Abraham and said, what is this you have done to me? In other words, you set me up, man. You set me up for failure. How could you have done this to me? Why did you do this to me? Why did you not tell me she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now, here is your wife. Take her and go. Now, I don't know that if Pharaoh did come in there, I mean, if Abraham did come in there and say she was my wife, I don't know if they would have tried to kill him and take her. I don't know that. Evidently, Abraham thought that, so I have to understand that from Abraham's understanding, evidently that kind of thing happened in that particular era, in that particular place. And I would deem to say that it would probably happen in certain areas of our world right to this day. I don't know of any, but I'm pretty sure that it could happen. Because we know how desperately wicked men are, don't we? Especially desperately wicked men that don't know God. They're only out for themselves. And that's exactly who Pharaoh is. We know he's only out for himself because a beautiful woman comes into his city under his control. And what happens to her? She gets shipped straight off to the harem. That's the kind of person that Abraham's dealing with at this particular point. Now, we don't know what Abraham's rebuttal was to Pharaoh. I don't know if he said, you know, I don't know if he had a discussion with him this time. I just know what Pharaoh said to Abraham, because that's what God tells us. But he says, now take her and go. And the Pharaoh gave orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. Now, when he says Pharaoh gave orders concerning him, Pharaoh told his military, said, basically they said, get them people out of my area. Get them people out of my territory. They have caused me nothing but problems. Look at this place. It's in disorder because of these people. The plagues have happened all because of these people. I guarantee you that's the kind of idea that Pharaoh had. We see it in what he says, because he says, what have you done to me? Not, what has your God done to me because I took your wife from you? Was the Pharaoh innocent in this? Was Abraham guilty in any way? Yeah. And the thing about it is that each person can derive their own understanding from it. Was Abraham, did he have partial responsibility in this? You could say yes. Some people could say no. Was the Pharaoh tricked? Some people could say yes. Some people could say no. That's for you to decide upon yourself. But you got to realize that the Pharaoh's not a good guy. If the Pharaoh is taking basically women that walk into his house and in his city and throwing them into basically a harem, he's throwing into his sexual prison is what he's doing. Not a good guy. I don't feel any good things for Pharaoh. I think he probably deserved everything he got, probably more. Yes, ma'am. And let me ask you a question, too. Would it have been a stronger... If Abraham had walked in there and said to them, this, I am Abraham, this is my wife, and God did stuff, and Abraham was completely honest about it, and God prospered him, would that not have been a greater message for exactly who God was? Did Abraham, in his deceitfulness, because he didn't fully trust that God was going to protect him at this particular time, which he should have protected in his later years, I'm pretty sure that Abraham would have said, I don't care, God will protect me. I follow him, and I will do what he wants me to do, as he grows in the grace and knowledge of who God is. But at this particular time, would not have his message carried more weight if he had come in and said it in that particular way, where he put full trust in who God was? Did not it hurt when it's not a message, whenever we give, huh? Yeah. Yeah. We all have to grow, don't we? Yeah. Yeah. So, But it's amazing how God is still, whenever God says he's going to do something, he does exactly. He protected him, even though Abraham might have been a little wrong in his way he went about doing it. So even in our imperfect, in our imperfection of how we live our lives, God can still shine through it, can he not? And it's amazing. Anybody got anything else before I move on a little bit more? Yeah, but later on the Pharaoh, they do the same thing to the next Pharaoh. So they don't learn their lessons. Now, go ahead. Yeah, but God wasn't going to let that happen. Yeah. Yeah, and God will know that. God will protect you from yourself sometimes because he's God and he's in charge. And understand that any time that we sin, it is due to a lack of faith. Because that's what sin is. It's because we don't trust God enough and we think we got to do this thing a certain way and we should be doing it the way God would have us do it. I got about 15 minutes. So well, let's read on just a little bit more. So Abraham went up from Egypt. He, his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev. Now, Abraham was very rich on livestock, in silver and in gold. Whenever he left Egypt, he was a wealthy man. God took the wealth of Egypt and basically gave it to Abraham during that particular time. Even though Abraham went in there in a deceitful method, God still benefited him. Why? God knows he's going to need this stuff. God is going to supply. Okay, because he's going out into a desert where he's going to have to live. He's going to live in this world. God is not going to magically give him everything. God is going to let him grow. And as he lets him grow and lets him go through the hardships that he's going to let him go through out there, Abraham grows in faith exactly who God is. But he says, when I get into trouble, God is always there to step in to protect me. You know, coming into children as a foster parent right now, I promised them two things. I promised them, one, I'm never going to lie to them. I may not tell them everything, but I'm never going to lie to you. And I said, I will always protect you. I don't care if it hurts your mother, your daddy, whatever. My key responsibility is taking care of you. And that's kind of what God does to us, right? God never lies to us. He never tells a lie. He may not tell us everything. When you ask for something, what's the three answers you get? Yes, no, not now. Yes, no, not now. God can't lie. He is truth. God doesn't always give us everything we want because he knows it's not good for us. It may never be good for us, or we may not be ready for it at this particular time. And God will always protect us if we have faith in him. Does that mean that God always protects us in the way that we think he should protect us in? No, God has his own ways, and God can do whatever he wants to. We're a vessel. We're a vessel unto him. But he gave us the ultimate protection, did he not? What is the ultimate protection? The ultimate protection is everlasting life through the finished work of the cross. We simply believe in that. We trust in that He did that for us, and we get everlasting life. What in this world can hurt us when we have everlasting life? But we're fearful of the unknown, are we not? That's our humanity. And that's the devil whispering in our ears saying, well, you know, this might happen or that might happen. We need to have faith that God's going to take care of everything for us. And it's a hard thing. You know, I say to myself that if God will allow me to do it, I want to be able to bury my wife and my son, and then I can go to the hereafter happy. But maybe I should be saying, God, I trust that if you take me today, that you have the power to take care of my wife and my child too. You see where it goes? But in my humanity, I think I'm the only one that can take care of them. It's my responsibility. So that's the kind of thing we battle against, is being this fleshly creature that we think we are, right? Or that we truly are. Anyway, Abraham left. He was very rich in livestock, silver and gold. He journeyed from the Negev as far as Bethel, and took a place where he had to the place where he had set his tent in the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar to the Lord, and there Abraham called upon the name of the Lord. He went right back to where he started from. He went down to Egypt, caused a little ruckus down there with his fib. God took care of him. He come out of there a richer man than what he is, and he's back exactly where he started from. We'll go on just a little bit more. It says, and Lot, who was with him, also had flocks and herds and tents. Evidently, Lot got a little bit of reaping of the benefits too, right? Lot prospered while he was there too. He was under the house of Abraham. Evidently, he prospered too. He says, so they had flocks and herds, so that the land could not support both of them, both of the dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. In other words, when you're supporting livestock, it takes food and water, right? And there's only so much grass for livestock to eat, and there's only so much water for these livestock to drink. And when you have huge herds, you know, you used to see years ago, and you hear, watch all the movies, and it's like the settlers come in and they want to fence off the wilderness, and all the range guys are like, no, you can't fence off the wilderness. That's where we feed our herds at. All the cowboy movies you see, and you know, always the settlers always win for some reason. I don't know why. But, you know, the cowboys are the bad guys. But anyway, I digress. But basically, they have so much food available for this livestock in this particular area. So that if they take and they don't have, is that the kids? Are they done? Okay, we'll stop. We'll stop. I'm running out of time. So we'll stop right here, and we'll jump off in this next week. Put me down for, we'll just jump into 13:5 next week. How's that sound? Okay. Anybody got anything else to say before we jump out of this today? I know this is basic stuff, guys. It's basic stuff, but it's stuff that we need to be reminded of, because it's easy to forget the basics. You know, whenever I take and I tell my guys at work, they come to me and they say, Terry, the headlight aren't working. I had a guy come in the other day, the headlight aren't working, and the headlight's going to cost $700. I said, did you check the fuse? He put a fuse off and the headlight started working. We forget the basics because we think we're so smart that we can jump to the end. And we're doomed by our forgetting the fullness of the basics. We need to remember the basics. And always go back to the basics. Anybody got anything else? Wesley, you close for me this morning, sir?